For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast, where we explore how to center our lives and our leadership in the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ.
In the midst of the disruptive cultural shockwaves of the 21st century,
join us as we learn to take the love of God seriously as the force that holds all of us and everything together.
If you're loving this podcast, we invite you to go deeper and partner with us in our work by joining the Gravity Commons, our online community of practice for connecting and learning together.
As a member of the Gravity Commons, you get access to live podcast recordings with upcoming guests, as well as other opportunities to connect and learn together with us in real time,
including learning labs, member meetups, discussion boards, online courses, and our practitioner podcast. Go to gravityleadership.com/commons to find out more. See you in the commons.
Hey, you guys remember that diet program, Jenny Craig?
Yeah.
I've heard of it.
Have you ever tried Jenny Craig?
I have a lot of intimate knowledge of it, but I've heard of it. I've heard of that diet program.
My wife... She was a high school cheerleader, and her cheerleading coach's sister Sharon tells a story of walking in, and she was about 22. This sister walks into the bathroom and is looking for this sister and can't find her anywhere and calls out her name. And she says, yes. And she looks under the stall and can't see her feet. So she opens the door, and this cheerleading coach's sister is standing on the toilet eating a candy bar. And looks at Sharon and says, "Don't tell Jenny Craig."
Don't tell Jenny Craig.
So that's one of those phrases that we use all the time in the Tebby house. Like if we're eating something we know we shouldn't, we'll look at each other and we'll go, "Don't tell Jenny Craig." But my question for you all is, if you have one weakness when it comes to food, like the thing that you don't wish you ate and you wouldn't recommend anybody else eating, but if it's within 20 feet of you, you're vacuuming that right down the chute.
Yeah.
You're shoving it in your gullet.
Yeah.
What is it? Christy, what is it for you?
It's Krispy Kreme donuts. And you guys, I'm celiac. I have celiac disease. I can't even have gluten. Literally, in the last year, the two times that I've like cheated and had wheat, had some sort of gluten, both times have been Krispy Kreme donuts.
Look.
And listen, it is worth every stinking bite. Yeah. I don't even care
irrational.
That the next 24 hours I'm going to be sick.
Chrissy's like, technically I'm not suicidal, but Krispy Kremes may do me in.
Oh my gosh. I wish I hated them, but I don't.
Like the hot, do you like them hot?
Like off the conveyor belt. Just right in my, like melts in your mouth.
Oh yeah.
So good.
They are good. I do love a donut. and I love ice cream. So I've got a sweet tooth. And so oftentimes it's sweet things. But I will say, I think the thing that sort of gets me, like I can say no to a donut if I'm like, it's not part of the plan today. I'm not going to do it. But if I'm at a Mexican restaurant and you put, and I decide ahead of time, I'm only going to eat my meal. I'm not going to have any chips. And you put what? Chips in front of me with salsa?
Nobody does that, Ben.
I do that.
Totally impossible.
I know, but I have high hopes for myself. Mm-hmm. Every time.
Oh my goodness.
I can be a little idealistic about myself. And so it never works. It literally never works. They set the chips down and I think, and I just have one or two later. And then I have three baskets of chips and then the food comes and I'm like, I'm stuffed. Can't do it. Can I get
Well, they're paid for, you know, they come with it, Ben.
I know. Yeah. I think that might be part of it. But anyway, something about the crunchy, salty, just love it. And it's right in front of me and we're at a restaurant. So I can usually convince myself it's a special occasion.
Yeah.
We're at a restaurant. Hey, it's like special.
So, if you go to Michigan, they have cherry salsa there. And it is to die for. It is super good. It's better than mango salsa, better than,
peach salsa. Yeah.
It's awesome. Matt, what's your thing?
Look it up.
It's cocaine. You know,
I tell myself I'm going to quit, but I know
you're supposed
lines
to snort it, but I put it in the oven, get it nice and crispy. No, it's
off the conveyor belt.
Right up the conveyor belt, drizzle some sugar on it. dip it in salsa. No, for me it's popcorn. You guys, I will not even be hungry, and if it's like hot oil popped popcorn,
like movie
I can
theater
kill.
Popcorn.
I can eat my weight in that stuff.
So good.
And I got into this habit of watching like a show with my son or my wife like after dinner, and I literally will not be hungry. But like we'll be watching a show, I'll be sitting on the couch, I'll be like, time to eat some popcorn.
Time to eat some popcorn,
You know?
It's like just how it goes, yeah.
Because I sort of disassociate from my body as I walk over to the stove and cook it. I'm just going to make this for the family, know?
Don't think
for
any thoughts.
Family.
Because
for the family.
For the family. And then, I'm being a good dad.
And then I crush the whole thing and my daughter's like, Dad, did you save us any popcorn?
Walk over and make some more.
Lord have mercy. Lord have mercy. Well, we are, this is an intro to a podcast. I don't know if you knew that. You stumbled upon Christian guilty confessions. Our problems are food.
We're talking, this is Axiom 7 from our new book, Having the Mind of Christ. We're getting there through this series. This has been a lot of fun. Gino and Christy and kind of help Matt and I to reflect on these axioms, how they work in our lives, the practical implications of all these things. And so today's axiom is that God's love always reckons with power. The freshest axiom, if you will, in terms of its lifespan.
Brand spanking latest. New.
Yep. I think in our day and age is important. For us to be thinking and talking about power, learning to see it, learning to navigate it, learning to navigate it in the way of Jesus, the way that the power of Jesus, which is love, power of God, which is love, but also navigating ungodly power in the way that it's exercised in our world today. So anyway, lots to learn, lots to grow into as it regards this axiom. So
yeah.
It's one of my favorite axioms, honestly.
Ooh.
Like, I know you're not supposed to have favorites, but you kind of do. And I recently had a church ask me to come preach because they're using your book as like their sermon series.
Yeah.
And they were like, do you have an axiom that's like, you know, that you really want to like kind of preach on that topic? Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I think I want to do the power one.
Nice.
And I'm excited. In October, if you're in Denver.
Denver
Come
in October,
me.
Christy's preaching on power.
Yep.
That's so cool.
That is cool. Yeah. Way to go.
So I'm glad you added it. It's good. It's needed for me. I'm not sure. Even 5-6 years ago, I was really naming what I'm naming now and what I see now. My eyes have been really opened and so really grateful. And this has been so fun to dialogue and talk. And
it has been. Yep. After today, we've got two more episodes. about the book, and then we'll, you know, return to our regularly scheduled programming. We've already been recording actually some future interviews that I'm really excited about sharing with y'all, with people like KJ Ramsey and Joel Bowman and et cetera. There's a lot of others.
Yeah.
So.
Oh yeah.
You're really
anyway,
good.
Yep. Thanks for being with us on this journey, listeners. Here's Axiom 7. Here we go.
And we're back. Ben Sternke and I, joined by Christy Penley and Gino Kukurudo. Kukurudo?
Exactly.
Sometimes, Gino, I practice your name in the shower. To myself, in my shave mirror, watching my lips. I have very thin lips, but I do watch them closely without my glasses on, so they're blurry. But I practice saying your name, Kukurudo. Did I get it right?
Kirk.
Yeah, I'm just really uncomfortable with that whole scene. I just got to be honest.
What, me in the shower? That's, I can give you some more
information. You're practicing my name with your thin lip.
You have to know that was the intention, Gino.
Yes. I stare at myself in the shave mirror, but I only see from like mid pectoralis major up in my shave mirror.
Oh my goodness, we need to move on. Move on, please.
All right. Well, we're talking about today.
Thank you, Chrissy.
I was trying to make it better for Gino.
It was going there.
But Gino, there's this segment of time between. I have segments of, and I have to leave my conditioner in my hair for a bit before I wash it out.
Christy has asked us,
and
to
then I also put shave stuff on my face before I shave, and I have to let the conditioner soften my whiskers because my whiskers are thick and bushy, unlike Paul Penley's wispy whiskers.
Yes.
Oh, my poor husband.
And at that point, I just kind of look at myself and then I think I better practice this name because he's a friend and I don't ever want to mess it up and communicate that I don't care about him.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
We're talking about Axiom 7 today on the Gravity Leadership Podcast.
We're going to edit all that out.
We have gone through the first six axioms of our book. I'm guessing you've already listened to those because it would be weird to start on the seventh axiom of a series.
If you haven't, go back and listen to them. They're good.
Mm. Yeah. And today we're talking about the axiom that God's love always reckons with power. This axiom comes out of actually... the newest axiom, and it came to us like the other axioms came to us, which is us having to name things that either we couldn't see and then began to see, or when we were communicating with people or talking with people, we realized we were talking past each other because we had different paradigms. And so one of the things we talk about in the book is that Jesus is a man who operates with incredible power, right? As I'm not just speaking confessionally as the Son of God, but he's a man in a patriarchal, androcentric culture 2,000 years ago, right? So men had capital and social clout that women and slaves and eunuchs and other people didn't have. He also, that boy could preach, you know? Like he could teach, and he actually did miracles, we believe. And so he had a lot of power, but then he was also a Jewish person who lived in the Roman Empire under colonizing imperial violence. And so he knows what it's like to be a colonized person. He knows what it's like to be a person from a very, very poor part of his community. So his family was poor. There were all kinds of rumors about his mom, his dad. And so he had low social standing and actually, you know, was made fun of, not only where he was from, but look geographically, but, you know, his lineage was dubious or considered to be dubious. So Jesus had, in some ways, carried a lot of social power and in some ways did not. And when we actually keep that, hold that in mind as we read the Gospels, we see Jesus doing something almost in every interaction, which is he's identifying or reckoning with who has the power, and two, what work is that power doing, and three, is it just? Is it just? Mm. And so this axiom, God's love always reckons with power, is about learning to see how power works. And then learning to, as Cornel West says, justice is what love looks like in public, which I think we see modeled in Jesus, and something that we, if we're going to have his mind about us, something we need to do is not only learn how to see power, but discern what work it's doing, and then in some cases redistribute, and in many cases redefine, and in most cases both. Mm-hmm. That. So that's this chapter. Fun end note to append upon this introduction is that this chapter started out twice as long as it ended up in the book. There were just so many like biblical examples and stories and more information. I think this chapter had 16 times the footnotes of the rest of the book combined.
This chapter could be a book, honestly, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it needs to be talked about and discussed and processed. And so I totally understand why you're going to have to edit it down for a chapter. But I think there's your next book idea, friends.
Well, I think, we're going to write on love, and we got to talk about power if we're going to talk about love. Huey Lewis in the news. Gino and Christy, maybe we'll start out with our usual question here. How has this axiom proven true in your life, or where have you seen this to be true, and how has it been helpful?
Yeah. I think I first started to become aware of a need for some understanding, but that has become what you guys have put together in this axiom probably about 14, 15 years ago when I first moved into Philadelphia. And it was out of my own experience of my family and I, with our young kids at that time, in the church that we were in previously, the environment that we're in where my practice was in the suburbs outside of Philly, we always had to say no to things because we were like the poorest people in that church. And so when we were invited into things, and we always felt like in that setting, we didn't have a lot of power financially. We didn't have a lot of say so in a lot of things. We know we had more than other people, but in that environment, which was kind of our world, we kind of felt like we were on the margins in a way. And moving into Philadelphia, into a neighborhood where we felt like we went from being the people with the least amount of power and say so in things to among those who had the most. And we started realizing like, hey, where we are, or the location of our lives, has a lot to do with this, and we need to start paying attention to this. It was super disruptive, and it was just recognizing that if we're just talking about economics, we had to figure out how we could help people where we could barely help ourselves because there were people that needed our help more than we could find it from other people because we were kind of all of a sudden the wealthier people in our neighborhood, which was just super odd. That's only one of the many aspects of power. But to me, that started a journey for us to say, where are we not seeing this in other areas of our lives? Where might we need to pay attention to this?
Yeah, I think for me, it's shown up a lot in ministry, just as a woman in ministry. And to be honest, I don't think I could have named it. I don't think I was even aware of it until more recently. I mean, I had all these experiences. Like, I've worked at different ministries and different churches, and I had different experiences where I wasn't allowed to do certain things. I actually wasn't allowed to teach 15-year-old boys in high school chapel at a school because there was a fear that there was an 18-year-old boy in that chapel, and that would be a man, and a woman couldn't teach a man. And so stuff like that has been part of my story, but I just kind of chalked it up as like, oh, that's just what they believe, and I believe something different. And until it got into my bones and actually caused some real heart hurt, And I found some real freedom in just being able to name what I saw. That was my first step. towards healing was just to be able to call it what it was. And to call it what it was, misuse of power, is really hard for those who are in power over you to hear that. Mm-hmm. And so I see this in ministry. I mean, I see it all over the place, kind of like what Gino's saying, but I saw that in my own life. And then I think just honestly in the last 2 years, with all the racial bananas stuff that's happened in our country, my eyes have been opened to the power I have as a white person. Mm-hmm. And naming that as well has been part of my healing too.
Yeah, that's really good, Christy. I think it's significant what you said about your personal experience of hurt and being harmed by something. I remember this was years ago when we were talking about you know, different theologies of women, you know, in terms of ordination and ministry, that kind of a thing. And I think before being able to see power and be able to name it, it just felt like a different, to me in any way, it just felt like different interpretations of Scripture, which it is, different interpretations of Scripture, but it's not just a different interpretation of Scripture. The stakes are higher in terms of who can participate, who can use their gifts, who can't. And there's also power dynamics going on where there, you know, it's not like everybody's equal in terms of their power, and we just interpret this differently. There are power dynamics happening when women are prohibited, you know, from doing certain things. And that is that's important to name and important to reckon with. And so anyway, I just think it's significant too that you just bumping up against the hurt and the harm of being on the wrong side of power is what helps us see it, right? And so this, you know, this axiom, I think, as we were writing this chapter, I think it's not lost on Matt and I that this is probably a really important thing for especially white men in America, right, to reckon with. But all of us have some degree of power, and all of us need to reckon with that, you know, in some ways. And so so just like Jesus, all of us have somewhat sort of, I don't know, you could say intersectional identities, right, where you have some degree of power as a white person, but as a woman, you bumped up against the wrong side of it. And then it's hard not to see it when you hit the wrong side of it, right? Then you're like, oh, wow, this is not good. This doesn't feel good. This is not just. This is not okay. And so that's, I think, you know, this chapter is filled with examples of Matt and I learning from various marginalized communities, something that they've been able to see for a long time because they have to see it, and us learning to reckon with that as people who are most of the time on the, I don't know, not on the wrong side of power. I don't want to say the right side of power, but it's like power does, it's invisible to us and it works for us in invisible ways more than we realize.
Yeah, you know what? Matt actually asked me a question probably like 5 years ago. And he asked the question, what's your relationship with power? Hmm. And I actually remember you asking that question because I didn't have an answer. And that was just 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And now when I ask that question, whether that's in cohorts or small groups or just with friends, and people don't have an answer, it's like a light bulb goes off of like, oh, they haven't actually like paid attention. Their eyes aren't open to this. They're not naming it. They're unaware because they don't have an answer. So I appreciate that question. And I appreciate your work for both of you on this, because it's something I think that needs to be talked about and reckoned with for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm thinking of a couple artifacts about this. Have I told the story about the article I read about the Me Too movement and the Anzis and Sorry thing? Have I told you guys that story?
So you definitely told me, but probably not on the podcast.
So several years ago, Anzis Ansari had a date with a woman, and she wrote a article about the date, where basically he kept making passes at her over and over and over again. And later when she wrote this article, she basically was kind of saying, like, I felt sexually assaulted on this date, right? And then another woman was writing about her experience reading this woman's report of her date with Aziz Ansari. And she was reflecting on her reaction to it. And her reaction to it was to essentially belittle this woman's allegations of like feeling sexually assaulted. And she said, the judgment I made on this woman's story was, well, that's just a bad date. You just had a bad date. And she said she realized that this was her words. A bad date for a man is he doesn't get sex. A bad date for a woman is she gets sexually assaulted and has to say no 12 or 13 times. Mm. And she was realizing, like, she's internalized that is just okay. I just need to expect this as a woman, mm-hmm. to not have agency or autonomy in my body, and to endure and just expect that I'm going to have to incur some damage or harm from a man not honoring my no. And she was like blown away at the amount of internalized kind of just like normalization of sexual assault. This is one of the ways that power works in our world, right?
Yeah.
And she was like in real time writing about vicariously waking up to how power works, Christy, which is what you were talking about. Mm. I was reminded of that story when you said, yeah, I experienced these things as a woman in ministry, but I didn't have a name for them. I couldn't name it.
Right.
And so it's everything to go from, I name this as a bad date, to I name this as sexual assault.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's everything.
Yeah. I think the other thing that I notice about that story, Matt, and that something about power, the way the power works, that is difficult sometimes for people to see and understand, is that it's not always overt and explicit. So the power, you know, the power of, you know, the patriarchal power in that story was not, you know, like Aziz Ansari, I'm sure, didn't go on that date thinking, you know what I'm going to do? Exert, you know, male authority, you know, that kind of thing. And but it's a more subtle thing. It operates on the level of kind of culture. It's like invisible. It's just the air that we breathe. And I think your example of the woman sort of realizing that she has sort of inhaled this whole world where that's just a bad date. Like, that's the definition of what just happened there. Like, that's the way that this power works. No one individual or group of people has like secretly devised like the way that power is going to work and then like explicitly programmed it into interactions. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's important to name, because I think people that are learning to see power or are on the side of like not really sure if they can see power, and if they have some power, I think it feels sometimes a little offensive to them. You know, to say like, oh, well, this, you know, you exerted power in this interaction in a way that, and I think, I don't know, I think it makes it easier to repent, honestly, if I realize I'm caught up in a system here. This isn't like just one person's fault, and it's not anything that is trying to be done explicitly, but it does need to intentionally be repented of and backed away from. But it's helpful to realize that, like, we're just swimming in this water. This is a system we're caught up in. And that's part of the new lens, I think, that we need to see through.
Yeah.
Well, and it's interesting because, and I don't want to go off on a rabbit trail, but just let me say this one thing, maybe, that there are laws around sexual assault, right? Mm-hmm. It's clear with the law as to what's expected, but there are no laws around power dynamics. Yeah. In our culture, it's not clear. It's too gray. And so because there's not these clear-cut boundaries, it makes when, I'm going to say just as a woman, when I experience power dynamics at play, mm-hmm. I feel the pressure to quote-unquote be the good girl and just chalk it up of, oh, this is just the way men are, or this is just the way that ministries are, or this is, you know, and instead of actually naming it because it feels like too, like holding water in your hand.
Yeah. And you get in trouble for naming it, right? You like you go crosswise to the power structures and you get gaslit. And again, yeah. like nobody's intending to, most of the time, nobody's intending to do this. But just like the woman in that reading that article, like the immediate thoughts that come to mind are, let's justify the system. Let's keep it in place. The status mm-hmm. quo is fine. Like that's the move that keeps unjust power structures in place for all of us, even if we're on the wrong side of it. It's oftentimes easier to justify it so that we don't have to deal with the blowback of moving against it.
Hi, I'm Mac from Oconomowoc, Wisconsin, and I've been through a Gravity Leadership Academy cohort. Here's the bottom line. If you want to be discipled and learn how to make disciples, then this is for you. I serve as a pastor, and GLA has had a huge impact on me and my leadership. Not only will you find tools and resources that are highly reproducible, but you'll be connected to a group of people seeking to center their lives in the love of Jesus. If you like the Gravity Leadership Podcast and the conversations taking place here, I think you'll love going deeper in a Gravity Leadership cohort.
To find out more about Gravity Leadership Academy, visit gravityleadership.com/academy.
Like, Gino, I want to move on, but I want to return maybe later in this conversation to your experience being the most economically, the least economically advantaged in a community or system, and how that it took that to open your eyes to some of these things. I think there's something key in that. And I want to maybe use that as a springboard to the next question of where are you waking up to this axiom now? Or where is it most difficult for you right now to see, to know how to love, because it's hard for you to see power? Gino, you want to start?
I do. I think the first thought that comes to mind is it's really hard for me to have ownership of things I'm not aware of. So that kind of almost the question is like troublesome, not in a sense of like you shouldn't have asked that question, but it just brings up for me that is where this is most difficult, is that I know I have enough experience and people that speak into my life that share their points of view on things and their experiences, that I know I don't have awareness of many things, and I just don't know what those things are. One thing maybe I could go back if it's all right is Ben, you had mentioned, it really resonated with me, that as white men, we have a really maybe more difficult time recognizing our power, because it's just kind of the way in which we enter the world and assumed for us. And so tying into my experience with that economic change was that was also the church where I experienced spiritual abuse. And that was an eye-opening to me as a white man that there were powers at work, because that wasn't just someone with a different theology, but that was also someone who didn't think they were trying to hurt people. And they just had no awareness of how they used power. And that discrepancy, it affected me so much that it woke me up to it. So now we enter into years later, 10 years later, a lot of what I do and why I got involved in planting a church was because I had an awareness that there are power dynamics in every relationship. And I wanted to be a part of seeking to expose those, to understand them. And so that's this work at the Table Philly a lot for me is just becoming more aware. It's the most difficult, challenging, upsetting and discouraging, beautiful and joy-filled work I could imagine doing, because of how I started answering this question. I don't know what I don't know. And thankfully, I have people that are pointing this out. So there's areas of people's experience as immigrants, race, gender, sexuality, finances, and not just like income, but housing, historical redlining in our neighborhood, gun violence and where that occurs and with whom, and is this just an access to gun issues, or this is historical poverty and all of those things, and the power that's used to just put people in jail, which doesn't help because they can't pay bail and they can't get out. We had a teenager who was wrongly accused and imprisoned for 3 years because he couldn't afford to get out of bail, get bail. Crazy. So we, you know, it's and that's crazy. We have people in our church that work just on that, trying to work against the cash bail system and the injustices of that and the abuse of power. And so the more I dig into this, sometimes I say, like, I wonder if it would be okay to not be aware of everything, because I might, you know, I might have less that keeps me up at night. But I know that's not true, because I go back to my own experience of how painful it was to be abused, and how amazing finding God meeting you in that process and the growing awareness that comes from that, and how you can actually participate in some ways in healing, in redistribution of power, and in seeking justice. That's really good work, but it's challenging.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I appreciate you sharing that, Gino. One of the pieces of feedback, I think this axiom is such a, as Matt said, it's the newest one. And it's one that we really sort of were beginning to learn that we needed to name. Originally, this book was only going to have 7 axioms. And so we actually, mm-hmm. we wrote a counterproposal to the publisher and we're like, hey, can we write another axiom? And they graciously allowed us to change things up. And I'm glad they did, because anyway, this kind of reflects our bleeding edge learning right now. And because of that, I feel like it is it's a very practical axiom for us. But I remember realizing that we needed to root this axiom and all the action that it requires of us. We needed to root it in a sort of a gospel statement. We needed to root it in something about God. All the other axioms are about God or about God's love, or, you know, they're a truth that we're returning to, you know, in order to embrace a new paradigm. So anyway, I think it's a long kind of roundabout way of saying, I appreciate you mentioning the good work that Reckoning with Power does, Gino, because it's not just like, I don't know, like sometimes people, can accuse, I don't know, if you guys have heard this, but like, you know, this is just the latest fad, you know, everybody's talking about this and it's going to pass. And the only reason people talk about it is because they want to like impress their, you know, neighbors or their friends. They want to be cool online. But what we're talking about is very real life stuff. And when we can actually stand in solidarity with those on the wrong side of power, those who've been marginalized by unjust power, and work for justice, what we actually see is we do participate in God's love. That's part of what God's love is doing. And we're missing out if we don't participate. You know, we're missing out on the healing that God wants to do in these situations if we don't see it and recognize it. And not like just, hey, we got to do something about this, but we recognize that, okay, God's at work here. God's at work among these people. God's at work in the midst of this. And this is where we're going to encounter the fullness of God's love. If we'll embrace this work, we'll actually encounter, we'll be blessed as well as we stand in solidarity with those who've been mistreated.
Yeah, Ben, I feel like, I'm not sure if how I said that sounded like Enneagram 7 enough for me to point all that pain. And as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking like I'm being really stirred and encouraged, because, you know, part of my motivation is that I want to step into something I don't know how to do.
Yeah, bro.
Because I do believe that this is where Jesus is at work, and he wants to see redemption in this. And there are people that are just crazy enough and maybe a little optimistic to jump in and say, I don't want to miss watching the healing that I've seen in my own life happen in other people's lives.
Yeah.
And so I go into things not knowing what the heck I'm doing and how the power is at work, and people telling me, you know, hey, you don't look like someone who's bringing good news into this neighborhood. And that's what I learned. That's the side of learning. And on the other side, maybe in 10 years, we'll see more of that redemption and joy. Yeah. And I won't miss it. And that'll be good news to me.
Yeah, good. Good, bro.
Well, can I just say to all three of you that I see this in you encouraging me in my life. And what I mean by that is all three of you, I have seen God be at work in and through you in Reckoning with Power. And and that comes through what you say on this podcast, but it also really comes through who you are off this podcast. And to me, that is like really beautiful and really encouraging. And not only do you talk the talk, but you also have given, I'm only speaking to like gender issue here, but you've given me an opportunity in different settings, whether it's on this podcast or speaking engagements or whatever, and encouraged me and given me the platform, which is really putting feet to what you're saying. Mm. And so maybe I just want to name for our listeners, we have this opportunity. If we have the power, we have an opportunity then to give the platform, to share the power, to, you know, to actually yeah. make a difference in our actions by mm-hmm. the decisions that we make, the yeah. conversations that we have, the platforms we give other people. And I just encourage you to do it. I mean, because yes. it's really life-giving to the people on the other side, including me.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that, Christy. I think that's true. That's one of the easiest and best ways to get started with this. Cause we can't it's easy to feel overwhelmed sometimes when you look at this stuff, like sure. all the problems you named, you know, earlier, Gino, like all these systemic yeah. issues that go back hundreds of years, there's policy decisions that we have nothing to do with really, you know? So what do we do? Where do we start? But I think that is one great way to start is just to say, what kind of cultural power do I have as a parent of children, as a man or as a white person or as a person with some money, whatever it might be? And how do I give that away? How do I learn to recognize how that power works in my relationships and seek to rectify perhaps unjust situations? And it can be a really small thing, you know, it can be learning to raise up women in your church as leaders. I mean, this is something Matt and I write about in the book, and you hit all kinds of blind spots when you try to do that. Things you didn't realize were true until you do. And, you know, but the only reason we learned those things is because we tried it. You know, we just tried mm-hmm. to, and we have some great women in our midst as well who were kind enough to tell us the truth about how we were impacting them. So. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe as we wind down here, what questions did this chapter leave you with? Or what are there areas where you feel like power is at work or in play that we don't cover that you think are worth exploring?
I don't think that I thought of anything that you hadn't maybe addressed or at least left room to be addressed. I think the questions I have is, how does someone reading this get started? You know, I believe, if I recall correctly, it's even difficult. I think you named that. It's difficult to give the examples of where you're working this out and it not be, you know, contextualized and also, or even come across strange. So I think, how do we help people move from having this energy that they want to see change to starting to see the first move? Like, what is the next step? How do they discern?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I don't know how I see any of this unless I have true solidarity with powerless people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean charity. I don't mean proximity. Proximity's good. I mean, because you can keep power and be proximal. You can be the helper. You can be the expert. You can have the resources. You know, you can be the white savior. And I'm talking more about like actual putting your body in a place of marginalization.
Mm-hmm. Where your destinies are bound up together.
Yeah, where you don't experience the privilege of your power, or you do, but to a greater degree, you experience the lack of privilege with others' powerlessness.
Yeah,
I guess there's like an empathetic existential learning, Gino, that was crucial for me, I think. You can get some of that reading books, some of that maybe reading other people's stories. Mm-hmm. But nothing beats like real world experience there.
Yeah, that's helpful.
Yeah, I would say the same in the sense of we just have to keep asking people and creating a space where they can be vulnerable and actually tell the truth. Because we could ask the question and create an environment where they can't tell the truth. But I think we have to come with a posture of, I could be wrong.
Yeah.
And I need to learn.
Yeah.
And if we don't come with that kind of openness, I'm not sure we'll actually learn. Yeah. And there would be any transformation.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really good, Christy. I think I'm going to combine that with Matt's comment as well then, to say, like, as we seek solidarity with the marginalized, especially if we're coming from, say, the white, you know, as a white person, or from a non-marginalized community, or from that aspect or standpoint, I think we have to be really careful. We just have to be cautious of our colonial instincts that are sort of live in our bodies, that may show up there, or that, you know, as we seek solidarity, you know, with marginalized communities, you know, like, marginalized communities might be super suspicious of that at first. Be like, well, what's your angle here? What are you doing? What are you trying to? And so we have to come with some humility, I think, and come with some sense of, I really don't know what I'm doing, but I really sense Jesus calling me into this. And so, like, will you help me, like, know what to do? You know, and so confessing our ignorance and asking, say, what would it look like in your mind, you know, for this to happen? Like, help me understand what would feel like solidarity to you.
Yeah.
And then there's probably a reckoning that would need to happen, because most of the time that's going to cost us something that our privilege affords us to, you know, we can stay above the fray. You know, we don't get targeted, you know, in the same ways that marginalized communities do, but being in solidarity means that we do get targeted. Right. And so, you know, there's all kinds of examples of this, you know, throughout, like, U.S. history, for example, of people who stood with, you know, white people who stood with the black community and, you know, were punished for it by other white people, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's some, I mean, that's kind of an extreme example, but there's always going to be some cost to you. And that is basically, like, that's helping you see your privilege. That's helping you see your power. And that's the opportunity then for repentance, to say, okay, I'm going to lay down this privilege, this power that I have, in order to stand with this marginalized person in solidarity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any thoughts from you, Christy, on that?
No, I agree. I agree. And I think, I want it to be different.
Yeah.
I want it to be different in all of those ways we talked about.
Yeah.
And, there's a grieving, truly. The more my eyes are opened to reality,
yeah,
there's a grief that comes.
Yep. Yeah, I think it's important to say that all of us can bear witness to the fact that this is not something that we grew up with an intimate knowledge of.
No.
That we've had to develop and grow, and even gain the capacity to see how power works. And so if you're listening and this is hard for you, or you're not even sure what to think about it all, I just want to encourage you that I think we've all been there, either not even knowing what we don't know, or being skeptical that this is even something to know. And I want to commend this chapter in the book, where we really tether this to the life and teaching of Jesus.
Yep.
I think our culture cares a lot about this right now, and I think that's a reflection of God's heart. And just because the culture cares about something doesn't mean it's legitimate or illegitimate. But if you have any anxiety, or you know someone with anxiety about that, is this just a fad or a trend, like Ben said earlier? I heartily recommend, encourage you to check out this chapter in the book where we talk about how Jesus operates with this awareness, this empathetic intelligence about how power is working, and that we can't love with wisdom if we can't see power.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and I wonder if even there's questions that you guys put at the end of the chapter, reckoning with your power, and I just encourage people to not just read those and answer them on their own, but to answer them in community, because I think that's where real work can be done and real learning can happen.
Yeah. Yep. Great. Well,
good word.
Thanks a lot, everybody.
Yeah. Lovely to be with y'all.
It's great.
Well, we're winding down, guys. Just two more episodes. We got Axiom 8 and then the conclusion of this book. And
quick, write a new book so we can keep talking. Yeah.
Well,
we have to get a proposal out first. It's not quite how it works, you know.
They do happen
quickly.
It
doesn't work that way.
Yeah, so we just lock ourselves in the basement and write until the book's done.
Wait, this isn't just a blog that gets printed and bound? You guys do work on this?
What?
I'm new to this. Sorry.
That's so funny. Yeah. You don't realize, but it's true. All right. Well, we'll see you all next time. Hey.
Yeah. Peace. Thanks for being with us.
Peace.
Hey, everybody. It's Ben. I need to go work out. It's kind of on my calendar. I've been getting back into working out. But first, I need to record this quick outro to our podcast series. I hope you're enjoying this as much as we are. You can order Having the Mind of Christ, which is our new book. It is now out. It is available everywhere books are sold, etc. It is 8 axioms that name paradigm shifts that can help us reconstruct a more resilient and robust faith from the rubble of the deconstructive, the important, necessary work of deconstruction. So you can order the book now anywhere books are sold. If you would like, please leave us an Amazon review. That helps get the word out about the book and helps the algorithms, the secret, mysterious, arcane algorithms, to recommend the book to others, and hopefully others will find it. If you do want to, it's kind of, you know, our book launch team. You're still, actually, if you want to, you can join it. We've kind of done most of the work of the book launch team, but we're still asking people to share about the book. You can go to gravityleadership.com/launch. And the other cool thing about the launch team is that we are designing some cool different products, some swag, if you will, that we're going to offer to the book launch team at a pretty steep discount. And so if you'd like access to some of that stuff, we're developing it now. You can join the team, gravityleadership.com/launch. Also, if you order the book from IVP's website, there's a link in the show notes, or you can just search it up. You can get 30% off plus free U.S. shipping by using the code GRAVITY, G-R-A-V-I-T-Y. If you would like to leave us a message or ask a question, you can go to gravityleadership.com/message and click the start recording button. It actually is pretty cool. It just leaves us a little voice message, and we can either reply to you with a voice message. It'll come into your email inbox, or we may play it and on a future episode and answer the questions on a future episode. So avail yourself of all of that, listeners, and we'll see you next week for Axiom 8. Peace.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. If you're finding it helpful or enjoyable, we'd love it if you'd tell your friends about it.
Ratings and reviews online also help others find the podcast. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And you can join our Gravity community online for free at gravityleadership.com/join.
You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as our email most Fridays with curated links to articles we find interesting and helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join.
Our podcast is produced by Ben Sternke and Matt Tebbe. Aaron Sternke edits and mixes the show. You can check out his work at aaronsternke.com.
We'd love to hear from you. To record a question or comment for us, go to gravityleadership.com/message and click the start recording button.
You can also email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. Catch you next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time.
Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.